Thanks for spending time with Fusion Community Church through our podcast. These can be accessed anytime through iTunes or on our website, fusioncommunitychurch.org. We hope you enjoy today's message from Pastor Andrew Fetter.
There was a girl named Anna that was born outside of Nashville, Tennessee in the early 70s. Her mom and dad had met when they were kids, and they grew up in the same town at the same elementary school, and they were the typical story, high school sweethearts who got married after graduation, started a family, bought a house, worked an average, ordinary, everyday career there outside of Nashville, and lived in that as their hometown the rest of their lives. They had three kids. Anna was the youngest, and she grew up in a small little three-bedroom house in a typical suburban neighborhood. She shared a bedroom with her sister. And sure, her life wasn't perfect, her home life, her family wasn't perfect, but for Anna, it was home. She grew up there knowing love, knowing acceptance, knowing what it took to be committed to those in your family. She was a typical little girl, dreaming of big things, dreaming of one day meeting her prince, planning out every detail of her life, especially her wedding, decades before it ever took place, longing for that man that would stand at the end of that aisle, the man that would bow down on his knee and ask her to marry him. Longing for that man to meet all of her needs and provide for all of her dreams, as many little girls imagine. She looked at her parents' marriage because she had a pretty up-close view of it. And although it wasn't terrible, there were things she saw that she didn't want in her marriage. She wondered, what if I can find someone and we'll be more crazy about each other on our 10th anniversary than we were on our first? As she got older, she had more thoughts along this line. She wondered if maybe the man she might want someday walk down the aisle with that she called her best friend could still be her best friend 20 years later. She even in high school wondered what it would be like to actually retire together and enjoy that twilight season of life with her best friend. Because when she looked around at her parents and her friend's parents, she saw two people that maybe didn't like each other too much anymore. Anna had a great beginning. Brian's story was quite different. Brian was a couple years older than Anna, and his experience of family was nothing like Anna's. His parents met each other for the first time, kind of on accident, after a concert on the West Coast in the late 60s. You can fill in the gaps from there. Brian's mom and dad immediately hit it off. They were immediately attracted to each other, and that night, in the backseat of a car, Brian's mom got pregnant with him. The relationship moved fast and out of control for about the first 10 weeks. By that time, this couple, whose love was on fire, decided to take a spontaneous road trip across the country and, oddly enough, found themselves outside of Nashville. Almost 3 months later, it was then that she found out she was pregnant. It was there that this man that she was falling in love with her, when he found out the news, left her behind outside of Nashville so he could continue to sow his wild oats because he wasn't ready to be a dad. So Brian's mom, heartbroken and alone, pregnant with Brian, figured Nashville was as good a place as any to settle down with this boy and start a family. Start this family. It wasn't how she had envisioned or planned for it to take place, but it was what it was. She definitely wasn't going to head back home. There were too many hurts, too much baggage where she was from. By the time Brian was 10 years old, he knew what a boyfriend was because his mom had had dozens. And none of them seemed to care much about him, and oftentimes even less about her. Many times Brian would come home from school and he'd find his mom on the couch crying with a fresh bruise. Meanwhile, her passed out boyfriend was in the next room. It was on those days that he often dreamt about what it would be like to break free from this nightmare he seemed to be living. What if he could leave this place behind? What if he could start fresh? What if he could find his purpose in the world and actually do something meaningful? What if someday he married a woman who actually wanted the same thing he wanted, that wanted commitment and focus and longevity, and he was willing to fight and work hard to make that relationship better than any other relationship he'd ever seen up close? Was that actually possible? Could that actually happen, or was his dreams of a preferred future just a fantasy? Anna had a great beginning. Brian had a very difficult beginning. Just so happened many years later, right there in Nashville when Anna was in college, she walked through the doors of a local pizza place where Brian was one of the delivery drivers. He was there behind the counter at the time, the first time she walked in, and we can just say that she caught his eye. He was incredibly interested in this beautiful young woman. After that, a couple times a week, Anna would come into this pizza place with many of her classmates to study, and they would get dinner, they'd get lunch, they'd grab a soda. And over time, Brian worked up the courage to engage in her life. And the two of them really began to hit it off. Now, right now in this room, Some of you are in your hearts, you're rooting for Brian and Anna. Just knowing very little about their backstory, you're rooting for them. Now, others, I know most of the guys in the room, there weren't enough explosions or guns or aliens or superheroes to be that interested in the story. But many of you, you're kind of rooting for Brian and Anna. What's interesting is they don't even exist. It's a fictional story. But the point is, we love stories. They stir our hearts. They stir up our emotions. They lead our hearts places. They give us desires. Right now, if you think about your favorite book, your favorite movie, your favorite television show, or maybe even one of your favorite stories that you tell your kids every once in a while, and your kids keep saying they want that story, that story, that story. One of the most identifiable traits of a great story is that you can get lost in it. That you can just kind of step into this other world where it takes you to a different place, where you can envision it and you can smell it and you can taste it and you can touch it. You can see it and you can escape your present reality and all of the stress and all the stuff that's going on in life, and you can enter into this new world with wonder and possibility. And when we find a story that we can get lost in, normally what takes place next is we begin to find a character that we can connect with, a character that reminds us of ourselves, especially at our best, a character that we could kind of connect with, and we can step into that world through that character. I can remember, I don't know about you, but I can vividly remember a couple of movies I saw when I was a kid where I stepped into that character, and I just wanted to be that person. And the first one was Superman with Christopher Reeves. You know, and the second one was Star Wars. I just remember watching them and just being mystified. Like, I wanted to live there. I wanted to go there. I never wanted to come back. I wanted to be Clark Kent. I wanted to step into a phone booth and change in an instant and have that leotard on, you know, brightly colored. Perspective changes over time, right? But I wanted to be invincible. I wanted to be able to fly. And I wanted to be Luke Skywalker. I wanted to pull out a lightsaber. I wanted to train to be a Jedi, and so did every other kid I went to school with. As human beings, we're drawn to stories. We're drawn to characters. We're drawn to the drama that happens when one life lives on another life. And every good story has more than one character. I mean, even in Castaway, Tom Hanks had Wilson, right? There's more than one character. We're drawn to that battle that wages between good and evil, drawn to expressions and stories of love and sacrifice and commitment, captivated by the adversity that other people face, especially historic stories that we know took place, that happened. They captivate us. The adversity that some people would face and then actually achieve and rise above. And often our desire to hear or read or watch stories leads us to find a community of like-minded people that love that fantasy world as much as we do, right? I mean, for instance, there's kind of, in our culture, there's a little bit of a tension between Star Wars and Star Trek. You know, how many here you would say you're a Star Wars person? How many would say you're a Star Trek person? More the science, okay. All right, so you guys can fisticuffs in the parking lot with your phasers and lightsabers after church. There's another one that's a little more recent. But still somewhat dated now. It's hard to believe. But there was kind of a battle waging between Seinfeld fans and Friends fans. What was the greatest sitcom? How many here more Seinfeld? How many more Friends? Okay. Kind of split in the room. But whatever it is, there's stories in our culture that draw us in. And normally we find other people that like the same stories, that develops a new community so that we can discuss what happened last night. You missed it. Did you see what happened? Blew my mind, right? Whatever that show might be. See, it's always fun when we get together with other people in community and we take in a story on a screen. Or even better, when we get to actually talk about it. Or even better than that, when we get together with those we care about, we begin to tell our story. Pieces of our history. Pieces of our journey. Those times we begin, hey, I got to tell you what happened last week. You won't believe it. It was hilarious. It was amazing. It was heartbreaking. We tell those stories. Got to tell you about a problem that I had one time and I just was able to overcome it. We want to encourage and uplift people. I want to tell you about a time I set a goal and I set measurable steps to work towards that goal so that I could accomplish what it was I set my mind to accomplish. Let me tell you about the time that I made the right decision, and here's the benefit of making the right decision. Then there's other times we say, let me tell you a funny story when I did something just really, really stupid. Like, you know, we tell those stories. And the best stories always involve a few different elements. A strong beginning where there's something that draws us in, something for us to connect to. And in a story that we read or watch, often it's a character we begin to care about, or we see a piece of ourselves in them. I know for me, often what stirs me is the underdog kind of stories, where you could kind of, there's that person that's kind of left out in the background, that nothing special is expected from, but you just know that there's something going on there nobody else can see. There's a gift or an ability that they have, or a heart that they have. So stories start with a strong beginning, and then what's created is a conflict or a tension that they have to navigate, that they have to manage, and oftentimes seems insurmountable or impossible for that character to overcome. Often the action builds to a climax, right? A climactic point where everything peaks and a hero rises, where love is discovered, where the truth is found, and the day is saved. And the greatest stories always leave us with some kind of ending that helps us to see that the future now, because of whatever took place, because of whatever decisions were made, the future is now better off because that person saved the day. See, as kids, our lives revolve around this kind of stuff. I mean, that's all we think about, dream about. It's all we talk about, right? Grand, important, I save the world kind of stories where we put costumes on and step into the roles and talk like and act like and adopt the secret identity of those that we idolize and we face down mortal enemies. Or for you, maybe ladies, it was putting on a crown, putting on a dress, holding a scepter in your hand and ruling over the kingdom of your toys, right? With the hopes of one day finding Prince Charming and living happily ever after. Our childhoods revolve around grand stories we dreamt would lead us down paths of incredible adventure, or at least what we hoped for. And I'm saying that to us, and it's kind of a kindred thing to think about, that childhood, those dreams that maybe you had. But life sometimes has a way of beating the dream and the audacity out of us. If we're to be honest with how our lives have turned out in comparison to the dreams or hopes we might have had as our younger selves, we often have a tendency to settle for a lesser story than the great one we once dreamt of. We fall into the temptation of giving up on the dream, settling for second best, and struggling or shrugging our shoulders at our long forgotten dreams. We seem to let go of the grand story we dreamt of, and we settle for something less than that we now live with day in and day out, right? I mean, this is what takes place. When you're a kid, you dream of what happens the day that I find my soulmate? I mean, what if tomorrow's the day I find my soulmate? Then life happens, right? And maybe today you're seated here and you're like, now you don't even know, what if that doesn't even exist? What if that concept, what if that person doesn't even exist? When you were a kid, you dreamt of, you know, what if, I know I fell asleep sometimes thinking this when I was a kid, you know, what if I wake up tomorrow and I have a superpower? What if I wake up tomorrow and there's something I can do no one's ever been able to do before? Will I use it for good or will I use it for evil? You know, what if? And then life happens and then we sit back with insecurity. We wonder, man, is anybody going to even hire me with the limited skills I have? It's no longer about a superpower. It's, do I even have enough to function and to make a living wage? We think about as kids, what if someday I get to be a mom? What if someday I get to be a dad? What if someday I have kids? Oh, I'll do this different and this different and this different. And we dream about it. And then life happens and now the doctors are saying, well, you may not be able to have kids. As kids, we say, well, what happens? What if someday I'll be really successful? What if someday I'll make a lot of money and I'll help people? What if? And now life happens and maybe someone's sitting here this morning, they're like, well, what if I don't pay my electric bill this month? This is the second month where there's just not enough. When you were a kid, you dreamt of, what if someday I save the world? What if someday everyone turns to me and I've got to make the decision and I've got to step up with courage? And maybe there's someone here today that's like, you know what? What if someone doesn't save me today? What's tomorrow going to look like? Well, for this series, this what if, the what if pursuits that we've set as our goals, as our dreams, as our hopes for the future. And oftentimes we set them and then we're disappointed sometimes when we reach them. But what if that long list of dreams and hopes that you had for your life, what if there was something even more valuable, more rewarding, more enjoyable than even the best of the best that you look at this life and you say, this is what I want? What if the things that you wanted are still smaller than even something grander that you were created for? What if pursuing your dream, your way, achieving your hopes in your life is actually the lesser story, even if you got all that you wanted? What if that was the lesser story of some grander story that you can be a part of? What if instead choosing to pursue God's dream for you is actually the greater story than your own? See, we all have a story. We all have parts of our story we love to tell. But unfortunately, we also have parts of our story we'd rather leave untold. Often in telling those hard stories, we'll even leave some details out because we're afraid of what people think of us, or we embellish or make up things that we don't want to look as bad as what we think we are. Think about your story this way. put this next slide up. The decisions I made yesterday determine the stories I tell today. The decisions you made yesterday, last week, last month, 10 years ago, when you were a young adult, when you were a teenager, those decisions you made then determine the stories you tell today. Whether they were good or bad decisions led to good or bad stories. Whether they were wise or foolish decisions led to wise or foolish stories. But the decisions you made then determine the stories you tell today. And the reality is, just after you've lived a little bit of life, wise decisions tell stories that are encouraging and uplifting and helpful. Foolish decisions in life often lead to heartbreaking decisions that often are helpful as well, because it saves us sometimes from learning things ourselves the hard way. Think back on your story right now, your life, the good, the bad, and the ugly. The parts you tell exactly as they happen because you couldn't possibly make that stuff up, and then also the parts that you embellish and make up, otherwise the story wouldn't be that entertaining. I mean, can you point to those defining moments of your story? The great moments, the captivating moments, your origin, how you started, your home life, your family growing up, young adult years. Can you point to those great captivating moments quickly? Now, beyond the day you met Mr. Wright, beyond the day you saw her for the very first time and fell in love in a second, you know, beyond the days your kids were born or the days they graduated or those significant milestones, those are important, those are rewarding, those are significant. But beside those are kind of a given. Can you point to other significant moments in your life? Or maybe a better way to ask this is, if you could write your own obituary right here, what would it say? What would you want to be remembered for? Outside of your marriage, your kids, your grandkids, your family, what would be the most significant things that you would want people to remember you for? Because the reality is there were a number of decisions that led to those significant moments. Think about the many decisions you made that had a significant impact on your life. If you really reflect, many of the most significant decisions you made were insignificant at the time, but they had a significant, they changed your life. Going forward, they change the direction of your story. You ever think about that? You ever go back and think, you know, while you were in college and you thought, I've got to get a couple electives in, and so I'm going to pick this one because I've heard it's an easy class with an easy professor. I can get a good grade that'll boost my GPA, but man, I have no interest in this topic whatsoever. And so you take the class and you get about 4 weeks into it and you begin to discover something about that topic you never knew, and you change your major and you change the course of your life, all because of a seemingly insignificant decision to take a class just to get the 3 hours of credit for, and it completely changed your life, and now you're in a career you never would have been in if you didn't take that class. That's a seemingly insignificant decision that led to life-changing implications. Maybe it was simply saying yes to an invite from a friend to get together and hang out with some of their friends, and it was there you met him or you met her, and your world was completely diverted that day. An insignificant, do I go out and hang out or do I stay home and do homework? And you went out and hung out and you met him, you met her. Or maybe you got a new job and you just needed to find something different. You got a new job and somebody here invited you to come to Biker Sunday or Local Heroes Sunday or whatever it was, or come on a regular Sunday or to another event at Fusion. And so you went in and it just seemed like an insignificant decision, and you heard a message or God spoke to you and it was just directed right at you. And something's happened and God's gotten a hold of your life and there's been this renewal take place. And now your life is different than what it once was. What's priority to you is different than what it once was. And it all goes back to, do I get up early on Sunday and go, or do I sleep in and get rest? A simple, insignificant decision that had life-changing effect. Sometimes we look back at life and say, wow, I can't believe the way that decision impacted my story. I can remember one in my own life when I was a junior in college. My roommate was a youth ministry major. I was a youth ministry major. And he came back from class one day and said, hey, there's this Wesleyan church down in Newark, about 30 miles south, and they're looking for a part-time youth pastor. And I didn't have that class with him, and so I wasn't aware of this announcement that had been shared, this posting that was on the bulletin board there in the religion department. And I didn't even go check it out. At that point, I had this choice to make. Do I go Sunday morning with my roommate just to check out this church and see what's there? Or do I do what I did most weekends, go back home and go to church with my parents? A seemingly insignificant decision. But I chose to go and to visit that church. And in the process, met the pastor and spent about 4 hours that afternoon with him. And Ended up working with him for 8 years, which then ultimately led me to relocate here and come on staff here at what was Cobleskill Wesleyan and then step into my role now at Fusion. And over that course, meet my wife and start my family. I mean, you can see just everything can be traced back to seemingly insignificant decisions that we make, but they have life-altering implications. So don't discount how small or insignificant a decision was you made yesterday, because that determined the stories you're telling today. All your great stories started as decisions. But this also applies to your horror stories. Stories that aren't positive or uplifting. Sometimes we look back and we think, man, I have no idea how something seemingly so small in that moment would impact my life in such a negative way. You look back and you think, man, I wish I wouldn't have started that. Wish I wouldn't have went on that business trip. I wish I would have said no. I wish I never would have used the first time. Wish I never would have said what I said. I wish I never would have gone where I went. I wish I never would have gotten behind the wheel of the car that night. I just had too much. Wish I'd never become friends with that person. Because when I made that decision, I had no idea how my life might start to unravel. It seemed insignificant at the time, but it had life-changing consequences. See, we don't need someone to teach us about how to think about ourselves or fend for ourselves. We don't have to learn to be selfish. We get that. We're born with that. With living out my story, being distracted with me and what I've got going on and my agenda. But what if there's a greater story that we can be a part of that's so much more rewarding than making it all about me? The decisions we made yesterday are the reason we tell the stories we tell today. This is true in our individual lives, but this is also the purpose of why God's given us His Word, given us the Bible. Telling us about the decisions He made on our behalf for our benefit. And today, we're gathered together on a Sunday morning of all days in a large group setting, all because we've decided as a group to continue to tell the story of Jesus Christ, God in the flesh, who came and made His dwelling among us, who made decisions 2,000 years ago in the Garden of Gethsemane to put His life on the line. And because of that, for many of us, we know that's changed our lives, changed our stories. Along with a couple billion people across the planet. But Jesus' story didn't begin 2,000 years ago. It began much, much earlier. We can't truly get a good vision or understanding of who Jesus is, discovering the origin of His story, unless we take a look even further back. We can't separate Jesus from the New Testament with God the Father of the Old Testament. As often as we kind of feel tempted to view Jesus in one light and God the Father in another light, we have to step back and look at the whole canvas, because it's all one story. It's all connected. Jesus and the Father are connected. Throughout the Bible, the more and more you become familiar with what's going on with the historical events reported in the pages of the Bible. These are not myths. These are not legends. These are historical events that took place. One of the most fascinating truths that you find in the Bible is that you can get lost in it. You can step into it. That what happened is still happening. That when I read a story of someone who's focused on themselves and they're distracted and driven by all the wrong things and then their family falls apart, I can say, wow, that's a word of warning to me to keep priorities right. I can step into that character. What happened is still happening. That's why it's relevant. It's always relevant. No matter where you open it up, it's relevant. And the more you read through how God has interacted with humanity through history, the more you find yourself in the middle of His story. All stories start somewhere, and everyone has a fundamental belief about your origin, about what gave you your existence, who or what made you, shaped you into the person you were, and shaped you into the person you are today. Oftentimes, we look at God the Father in the Old Testament differently, with less love or grace, but step back with me into the Old Testament. And from the very first chapter of the Bible, we see a God who is holy. We see a God who is set apart from us, whose nature is not like ours, a God who is good, a God who is full of love and will shake heaven and earth to show that love to His people. See, the essence of God choosing to create us at all was an act of love, a desire for relationships and community with us, the eternal, holy God. Choosing to create a beautiful world and then choosing to create a bunch of ragamuffins like us to enjoy it with Him. To develop a relationship and nurture it with Him. In fact, early on in the Old Testament, there's a fascinating story of an encounter the nation of Israel had with God at a place called Mount Sinai, where He reveals Himself to them as a nation, really, for the first time. It was here at Sinai that they were experiencing freedom for the first time in generations as a people. See, their parents and their parents' parents and their parents' parents' parents and their parents' 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 parents, and for generations, all they knew was slavery. All they knew was that from sunup to sundown, they belonged to someone else. And if they were here telling their story, it would be pretty monotonous. That was their life every single day, their energy, their lives, everything they had, everything they were, belonged and was at the mercy of their Egyptian masters. They were really the labor force for the Pharaoh. They had no choice in the matter. And as a people, they had been completely influenced over these many generations by Egyptian culture. For many who were Jews, their understanding of their culture and their heritage and their history had been lost if their parents and parents' parents and parents' parents' parents hadn't continued to pass on their culture and pass on their heritage and pass on the stories. For some of them, that had been lost. But for others, they still had faith that the one true God was there, that the one true God was hearing them, that the one true God was going to come on their behalf and set them free. They still had faith that one day God would send them a leader that would set them free from oppression. Now, this is where God selects Moses. Maybe you've heard of him before. And he speaks to him through a bush on fire. And he calls him to be this leader that God has been grooming, that God has selected Moses. And Moses, overwhelmed, this is where we can step into Moses' role, overwhelmed by his own fears and insecurities, said, No, that could never be me. I get that. You get that. That could never be me. God, I've got this problem and this failure, and I've got this weakness. But eventually, after initially trying to get out of the responsibility and the calling of God, eventually he chooses not to blaze his own trail, not to pursue his own story, but he chooses, he makes that decision to align his story with God's story. So he steps up, and then he stands up face to face with the most powerful, wealthy, and hostile man on the planet at that time. Moses tells Pharaoh face to face, he says, "Let my people go. Let God's people go. You need to release your entire slave labor force." Talk about going from the bush where he says, "I'm insecure," to standing face to face. Talk about guts. And Pharaoh, in his response, basically laughs at Moses. And it brings about the familiar plagues of Egypt, right? God trying to demonstrate his power to Pharaoh and to Egypt. And they were all sent by God. Why? Because God is evil and vindictive? No, they were sent by God to reveal to his people that he was there, that he loved them, that they were his chosen people, that what was being done to them was oppression, and it was not okay. Imagine being a Jew and witnessing that this man rise, that many have been praying for, this man named Moses. And he begins to stand up to the slave driver, risking his own life for you. And yeah, there were consequences for you because he took such a firm stance. But then imagine beginning to witness, eyewitness, these miraculous, unexplained events that were happening as a demonstration from God to show you that he loves you, to show you that he's heard you, to try to persuade the Egyptians to release you and your family because the God of the universe has a plan and you're a part of his plan. I mean, that'd be a pretty extraordinary thing to witness. If you were there, if you were one of the Jews. So eventually Pharaoh, under incredible stress and emotional pressure at the end of those plagues, he says, "Fine, just go." He releases God's people. And if you were there, if you were one of the Jews, you would excitedly have packed up what little you had and you would have set off on foot away from this place you didn't want to remember anymore, away from this bondage. It was shortly later that Pharaoh said, "No, I've changed my mind. Let's go back. Let's reclaim them. Let's bring them back because we can't part with our entire slave labor force. We need them to function." And so he goes and chases them down to push them back into slavery. But it's there at the edge of the sea that God shows up in a huge way and parts it in front of you. And you walk across on dry land. And you're reminded in that moment that, man, God is shaking earth to get to me. He is changing everything to get to us, to reveal himself to us, to show us his new future. It's here at Sinai that everything that the Israelites have witnessed God do to bring them to this point, it's here that God has chosen to reveal to them who he is, holy and righteous, set apart, and the expectations of this new relationship with him as God. Now, you can follow along in your Bible. We're going to be reading a lot from Exodus 19 and 20 this morning. But I chose to pick it from a paraphrase known as the Message. So if you have a different translation, it may not match up line for line. But I invite you to read through these two chapters on your own. And you can follow along with me today. But this is basically the first half of 19 and the second half of 20. But this is the account of what took place there on Sinai for God to reveal himself. And I want to challenge you in one thing throughout this series, really. I want you to step into the story. Not just sit back and hear it, but I want you to step into it as if you're there. What are you smelling? What are you seeing? What are you tasting? What are you touching? As Moses went up to meet God, God called down to him from the mountain. Speak to the house of Jacob. Tell the people of Israel, you have seen what I did to Egypt and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to me. If you will listen obediently to what I say and keep my covenant, out of all the peoples, you'll be my special treasure. The whole earth is mine to choose from, but you are special. Step into that. You're special. A kingdom of priests, a holy nation set apart. This is what I want you to tell the people of Israel. Moses came back and called the elders of Israel together and set before them all these words which God had commanded him. The people were unanimous in their response. Everything God says, we will do. I mean, imagine being in that stance. Okay, we saw Moses show up. We kind of questioned it. He stood up to Pharaoh. We kind of paid the penalty. And then these plagues started happening. It was kind of like, we can't avoid this. We can't explain this. Something's going on. And then Pharaoh releases us. And then we're standing there at the sea and we feel trapped. And God parts it in front of us. After all that you've witnessed, I think it would be pretty easy to say, hey, whatever God says, I'm going to do, because he's revealed himself to us. He's shown us how much he loves us. Moses took the people's answer back to God. God said to Moses, get ready. I'm about to come to you in a thick cloud so that the people can listen in and trust you completely when I speak with you. Again, Moses reported the people's answer to God. God said to Moses, go to the people. For the next 2 days, get these people ready to meet the Holy God. Have them scrub their clothes so that on the third day they'll be fully prepared. Because on the third day, God will come down on Mount Sinai and make his presence known to all the people. Post boundaries for the people all around, telling them, warning, don't climb the mountain, don't even touch its edge. Whoever touches the mountain dies a certain death, and no one is to touch that person. He's to be stoned, that's right, stoned or shot with arrows, shot to death, animal or man, whichever, put to death. There is a separation between us and God. He is holy. A long blast from the horn will signal that it's safe to climb the mountain. Moses went down the mountain to the people and prepared them for the holy meeting. They gave their clothes a good scrubbing. Then he addressed the people, be ready in 3 days. Don't sleep with a woman. On the third day at daybreak, there were loud claps of thunder, flashes of lightning. Can you see it? Can you hear it? A thick cloud covering the mountain, an ear-piercing trumpet blast. Everyone in the camp shuddered in fear. The God that did all this before you is now showing up in your presence. There's going to be some awe and some reverence. Moses led the people out of the camp to meet God. They stood at attention at the base of the mountain. Mount Sinai was all smoke because God had come down on it as fire. Smoke poured from it like smoke from a furnace. The whole mountain shuddered in huge spasms. The trumpet blast grew louder and louder. Moses spoke and God answered in thunder. God descended to the peak of Mount Sinai. God called Moses up to the peak and Moses climbed up. Jump into chapter 20, verse 20. This is right after God has laid out the Ten Commandments, his expectations. All the people experiencing the thunder and lightning, the trumpet blast and the smoking mountain were afraid. They pulled back and stood at a distance. They said to Moses, you speak to us and we'll listen, but don't have God speak to us or we'll die. Moses spoke to the people, don't be afraid. God has come to test you and instill a deep and reverent awe within you. Why? So you won't sin. The people kept their distance while Moses approached the thick cloud where God was. God said to Moses, give this message to the people of Israel. You've experienced firsthand how I spoke with you from heaven. Don't make gods of silver and gods of gold, and then set them alongside me. Make me an earthen altar. Sacrifice your whole burnt offerings, your peace offerings, your sheep, and your cattle on it. Every place where I cause my name to be honored in your worship, I'll be there myself and bless you. God had made decisions leading up to this point to engage his chosen people. The stories they told, the old stories, the old chapters of God's story they told. that carried with them, even through the slavery and the bondage, the stories of Noah, of Abraham, of Isaac, of Jacob, of Joseph. And they were still relevant stories. They were still applicable. But this nation was now on the verge of new chapters being written, and they got to be the main characters in the next stage of the story, the new volumes that would be written. They would get to be the eyewitnesses. Their children would get to be influenced by the things that they would see, by this new beginning. And God was presenting to them a decision, a choice. Choose to follow your Creator that's revealed Himself through you in this constant pursuit of setting you free, that He's just shown up time and time again to show His faithfulness, or choose to resist your Creator, even though He has set you free. That was the choice before the Jews, and which direction they decided to move in as a people would ultimately shape their future. Which decision they chose to follow or to resist at that stage, that decision led to the stories they would tell tomorrow. So in the same way that decisions you and I made yesterday and last week and last month determine the stories we tell today, God was helping them to see that the decisions we make today determine the stories I'll tell next week. And next month. And the stories I tell this week will dictate, or the choices I make this week will dictate the stories that I tell next week and next month. So the challenge of this is to look back and say, okay, what decisions have I made this past week? This past weekend? They may seem like small, insignificant decisions to hang out with a certain person or to allow someone to speak into your life. It may seem insignificant. To allow a negative voice into your life may seem insignificant, but step back and say, is this something that will lead me towards God, decisions for God, or is this something that's going to cause me to say, no, I'm not going to follow. I'm going to pursue my own thing. I'm going to blaze my own trail. Because small, insignificant decisions have the power to change the direction of our lives. The Israelites chose to take this journey, to discover this God that had ransomed them, that shook heaven and earth to reveal Himself to them. And we recall this story and the role that they played in it. The challenge we face today is the same as His, because God wants to write new chapters in His story. And He wants to use us that are willing to be the main characters in that story. But we have to choose, will we align ourselves as Moses did with His story? Or will we say, no, this is mine. This is my dream, my hope, my future. And will we settle for a lesser story than God's greater story? Would you just bow your head? I just want to ask you a couple questions. A couple of what ifs to consider this morning. What if you chose to step into God's greater story? The story that will never end, rather than setting out for your own little story that's someday going to come to an end. What might change in your life if you made the choice to surrender to God's plan, to God's design? What if we chose to immerse and saturate ourselves in God's story throughout the Bible in greater and more intentional ways so that we can know exactly where He wants us to be? What if we chose to fan the flame that God has already lit within us because He created us, rather than set off and try to light new fires on our own? What if instead of trying to create a purpose for yourself, a place for yourself in this crazy world, what if you instead made the choice to find out why the Creator created you, what He built you for, what He designed you to be about, what greater levels of joy and peace and fulfillment and satisfaction and sheer awe might you discover if you set that as your priority? God, I want to find out what You've created for me to be. I don't want to pursue what I want. And what would that look like if we together as a people took that journey together? Ultimately, we wrestle every day with, are our lives about us or are they about Him? Is it going to be about my story that I want to be the author of, or will we find ourselves in submission to the great author? What if choosing to walk through His story with others brought clarity to your mind for the first time in a long time, maybe, at exactly where you fit in His story, rather than always wondering where He might pop up in yours? See, normally if we're honest, our day-to-day lives are, God, would You help me with this? God, would You show up here? God, would You intervene here? And we set off on our own story, and then we ask God to pop up into it. What if we took a different approach and we allowed our story to die, and we just said, God, put me where You are. Do with me what You will, because I believe Your bigger story is better than my small one. Father God, I thank you for writing new chapters even in this room. Knowing that God, those today that are walking with you, that are nurturing a relationship with you, that maybe it was a few weeks ago, maybe it was a few months ago, maybe it was decades ago, that they began that journey. And God, their story is one that is aligned with your overarching story in their world. That God, it's not so much about you popping up in us, but it's about us aligning ourselves to you. The same way that Moses did, the same way the Israelites did. When you first revealed yourself and your glory to them, they stepped into your story, your plan, obediently. The challenge is the same for us today. And God, the reminder in the subtlety of the text is that we're designed for community, that we're designed to step into the story together, unified. God, we wonder, what if I do these things? What if I pursue you? What if I saturate myself in your story? What if I seek out what it is you've created in me to become? But God, we can step back and ask a grander question. What if we together set that as our focal point? To discover not only what you've created in us, but God, that all of us would align ourselves with you. That we'd be in unity in that desire. That it would be all about you and not about us. God, as we continue to dive into the different elements of your story over the coming weeks, God, we pray that you would give each and every one of us a greater hunger and desire to immerse ourselves in the Bible. To reinvigorate us, God, with a passion and a joy of opening up your word and rediscovering you. For some, it's a rediscovery. For others, God, in this room, they've probably never opened up the Bible on their own. And if they have, it's been randomly when they've been in need. God, help us to create that discipline of not just checking off a thing on a box, but getting lost in your story and finding our role, our place within it. God, we also pray over our life groups as they kick off at the end of this month, as the opportunity is going to be made for everyone over the course of 10 weeks to be engaged and involved in a group of people that are walking through your story, that are finding themselves lost in it and discovering, rediscovering who you are and what you've done in us. We worship you, God, and we just pray that you would author this next season in the life of our church, in the lives of our families, in the lives of us as individuals, that we would yield ourselves to you, the great author, and cease from pursuing our own plan, our own path. Looking at those things as they're okay, but they're less than what God has designed us for. And it's in your holy and precious name we pray. Amen.